Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, January 11th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
Fed officials preach patience on interest rate hikes.
U.S.-China trade negotiations move forward with another round of talks.
Former Nissan chairman Carlos Ghosn is indicted for a second time.
And oil heads for its biggest weekly gain in 2 years.
Government employees will not get paychecks as the shutdown enters its 21st day. Plus, President Trump's former attorney has agreed to testify before a House panel. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Islanders, the late goal topped the Rangers at the Garden. The Devils lost. The Mets have signed free agent infielder Jed Lowrie.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Use an integrated investment account from Interactive Brokers to earn, borrow, spend, and invest globally from one account. Learn more at IBKR.com.
And global stocks are posting modest gains this morning, 6:01 on Wall Street. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And futures are little changed. S&P futures down 2 points. Dow futures up 3. NASDAQ futures down 10. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%. CAC in Paris down almost the same. The FTSE 100 up about 0.2%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.1%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong was up 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 8/32nds, yield 2.71%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.9% or 45 cents to $53.04 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.5% or $6.10 to $12.93.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.1530. The yen, 108.27. Nathan.
Karen, we begin in the UK where we're getting word Brexit could be delayed beyond the March 29th deadline. That's according to the Evening Standard. The pound is strengthening sharply on the news, now trading at $1.2820.
And this comes as analysis from the BBC shows the Prime Minister on course for the biggest defeat in the history of Parliament. Joey Jones is strategic counsel at Cicero Group and former spokesperson for Theresa May.
The government strategy would normally be something where you would see the whole of government, every department contributing to the way forward. And yet, actually, it's being prosecuted very, very narrowly. So you have a situation where it's Downing Street, the Whip's office, and maybe a bit of DexEU as well, and everybody else in the cabinet just watching aghast as they see the Prime Minister and her colleagues heading for a brick wall.
Meanwhile, the UK economy continues to lose momentum with growth slowing to just 0.3% in the 3 months through November.
Back here in the U.S., one key word is emerging from the Federal Reserve: patience.
We're in a place where we can be patient and flexible and wait and see what does evolve. And I think for the meantime, we're waiting and watching.
Fed Chairman Jerome Powell preached patience in comments to the Economic Club of Washington yesterday, while Vice Chairman Richard Clarida did the same, saying the FOMC can afford to be patient as economic data evolve.
We're getting positive signs on U.S.-China trade relations with the next round of talks already on the books.
The Vice Premier Liu He will most likely come and visit us later in the month.
Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin speaking to reporters late yesterday. Since those remarks, Bloomberg News has learned there's now a date for those talks. The Chinese vice premier meets with Mnuchin and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer January 30th, though details have yet to be made public.
Well, stocks in China rose on the news, helping Asian equities round out their best week in 2 months. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Friday's price action was driven by optimism of further breakthroughs in the U.S.-China trade tension and views the Fed could move towards a slower tightening path. Japan's Nikkei 225 index rose 1%. The CSI 300 gained 0.7%, while there were gains too in Hong Kong, South Korea and Taiwan. Australian and Indian stocks edged lower, while the rupee appears to have missed the Fed-inspired rally to turn into Asia's worst-performing currency. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. Meanwhile, China is setting its growth target for 2019 at 6 to 6.5%. That's according to Reuters. The new target shows policymakers in Beijing accounting for an ongoing economic slowdown.
In Japan, former Nissan Motor chairman Carlos Ghosn has been indicted for a second time. Bloomberg's Stephen Engel reports from Tokyo.
Despite Carlos Ghosn's pleas of innocence in court Tuesday, Japanese prosecutors are adding to the serious charges against him. Ghosn, fellow ousted Nissan board member Greg Kelly, and Nissan itself have been indicted for breach of trust. Now, Ghosn's legal team says it will apply for bail now that he's been indicted, but prospects for that to be granted are slim at best. Stephen Engel, Bloomberg News, Tokyo.
All right, Stephen, thank you. 2019 is looking good for oil bulls, with crude heading for its biggest weekly gain in 2 years. Bloomberg's Alex Longley has more from our London bureau.
It's been a reversal of everything we saw in the final quarter of last year. On the one hand, we've got Saudi Arabia and its allies in OPEC cutting production. That's starting to hit the market. And then on the other hand, trade tensions and the macro picture, that's turned around as well, perhaps just denting some of those bearish views that were saying that we were going to see crude oil demand growth in 2019 of less than a million barrels a day. Now you're starting to see people pull back on some of those bearish calls.
And checking prices now, NYMEX crude oil up 0.8% at $53.05 a barrel. Brent is up 0.7% at $62.08.
In the U.S., we've had word of job cuts at BlackRock and State Street, but at J.P. Morgan, there's better news for bankers. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with more on that. Good morning, John.
Hey, Nate. J.P. Morgan Chase plans to increase annual bonuses at its corporate and investment bank. Sources tell us average percentage increases will be in the mid-single digits, with equity traders and investment bankers probably getting more than that. The division accounts for about a third of the firm's revenue. J.P. Morgan stock traders generated $5.57 billion of revenue in last year's first 9 months, 22% more than a year earlier. Revenue from investment bank that increased by 2.5%. J.P. Morgan reports fourth quarter earnings on Tuesday. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thank you. And AB InBev is considering an initial public offering of its Asian operations. Sources tell Bloomberg such a deal could raise more than $5 billion for the Budweiser brewer. Shares of AB InBev are up about 5% on the news. And futures this morning, they are little changed, with S&P futures down 2 points, Dow futures up 1, and NASDAQ futures down almost 11. The 10-year Treasury up 9/32nds, yield 2.70%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. 607 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's happening in the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. About 800,000 government workers will not receive a check on this payday, as the partial government shutdown has now entered its 21st day. Meanwhile, President Trump told Fox News he is edging closer to declaring a national emergency to fund a border wall.
If we don't make a deal with Congress, most likely I will do that. I would actually say I would. I can't imagine any reason why not, because I'm allowed to do it. The law is 100% on my side.
The president has closed off the only live negotiation on Capitol Hill to resolve the impasse. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on the president.
I don't think he really wants a solution. I think he loves the distraction that this is from his other problems, and that's most unfortunate.
Bloomberg's Bob Moon has more.
I think we're stuck is what Republican Senator Lindsey Graham now tells reporters. He and other moderate Republicans had pitched combining wall funding with other measures favored by Democrats, such as protecting young undocumented immigrants under the Dreamers program. After a meeting with Vice President Mike Pence, they told reporters that idea had hit a snag.
Seems to be there's not much interest in that. So I don't know what else to do.
Graham suggests it's time for the president to use emergency powers, though he concedes the shutdown could stretch on while Trump waits out any court challenge. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
President Trump's former attorney Michael Cohen has agreed to testify under oath and in public on Capitol Hill to give an account of his 10 years of working for the president. Cohen will testify February 7th before the House Oversight Committee. An American military official says the U.S.-led military coalition has begun the process of withdrawing troops from Syria. The U.S. has around 2,000 troops in Syria. Attitudes about the yellow vest protests in France appear to be shifting. Bloomberg's Gregory Viscusi has more from Paris.
Public opinion for the yellow vests is declining in France, according to polls, and President Macron's approval rating has started to inch up from lows. But that shift in opinion comes at a risky moment in Macron's presidency. Next week, the French president launches a 3-month public debate about ecology, taxes, and democratic representation, part of measures Macron announced in November to calm down the anger expressed by the yellow vests. But the risk is that it may throw up demands Macron can't agree to, which would further divide the president from public opinion. In Paris, Gregory Viscusi, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The planned demolition of the old Tappan Zee Bridge tomorrow has been postponed due to inclement weather. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Mike LaBarre. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. Coming up on 610 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, no team in baseball has added as many players this offseason as the Mets. The latest import, switch hitting infielder Jed Lowry, drove in 99 runs last season in Oakland and was an all-star. He signed for 2 years, $20 million. Not clear what position he'll play. It won't be second base. That belongs now to Robinson Cano. But like Cano and others who have joined the Mets this offseason, Lowry was once a client of the new Mets GM, Brody Van Wagenen, when he worked as an agent. At the Garden, Rangers and Islanders looking like overtime, 3-3. Late third period.
Around for Boychuk. 95 seconds to go in the period. Cal Clutterbuck down the right side. Zeke is trailing. Clutterbuck to the front. They score! Just barely puts the Islanders ahead on their first and only shot of the third period.
Islanders radio had it. They won 4-3. That's the Blue Shirts' fifth straight loss. Same two meet tomorrow afternoon in Brooklyn and Newark. Ex-Islander star John Tavares, two goals. Toronto topped the Devils 4-2. NBA in San Antonio's double overtime win over Oklahoma City. 56 points for the Spurs. LaMarcus Aldridge. Speaking of overtime, Hofstra played three OTs, beat William and Mary to go to 14-3 on the year. Monmouth lost in double OT at Quinnipiac, fell to 2-14. Fairleigh Dickinson lost in two overtimes to Central Connecticut. Starting at 4:30 tomorrow, four NFL playoff games in a span of about 27 hours, and the playoff field will be halved from eight to the final four. The first game tomorrow, the Chiefs host the Colts. The two quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes and Andrew Luck, had the two most touchdown passes in the NFL this season. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
John, thanks. Tune in tonight for the Bloomberg Business of Sports show to hear from the man in charge of the NFL sponsorship and consumer products business. We speak with NFL Network President and CEO Brian Rolapp. Catch that conversation tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on Bloomberg Radio. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up on 612 on Wall Street, Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The pound jumping after the Evening Standard cited unidentified UK cabinet ministers as saying that Brexit looks increasingly likely to be delayed beyond March 29th. Right now, the British pound $1.2779. S&P futures lower, down 4 points. Dow futures down 13. NASDAQ futures down 15. And the 10-year treasury up 9/32, yield 2.70%. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump closed off the only live negotiation on Capitol Hill to resolve the partial federal government shutdown, now poised to become the longest in U.S. history. About 800,000 federal workers will miss their first paychecks. In the NHL, the Islanders beat the Rangers. The Devils lost. The Capitals beat the Bruins. In the NBA, the Celtics lost. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. I want to get more now on this report that Brexit could be delayed beyond March 29th. Bloomberg News Director David Merritt joins us from London. What are we hearing, David?
That's right. So this report coming from London's Evening Standard, that cabinet ministers are briefing that this Brexit date, March 29th, is going to have to be extended. Why? Well, it's an admission, really, that the government is fully expecting to lose this vote on Tuesday. So they've got to come up with another plan. And the clock is ticking. So there really isn't time to implement anything else. So they're going to have to go to Europe and ask for more time.
So then is this the plan B that we've been hearing about from Prime Minister May?
Well, it sounds like certainly part of Plan B, ask for more time. Doesn't tell us at the moment what form of Brexit, though, Mrs. May is going to propose to try and fix the logjam. I think what you might be able to conclude, though, is that perhaps no deal. Of course, she said, it was her deal or no deal. Perhaps that is perhaps off the table, because if they're going to extend the process, it's an admission that we're not going to, in fact, crash out of the EU without a deal. And that's why you're seeing a rallying in the pound and UK stocks this morning.
So what could this mean for Brexit going forward?
Well, all the options still remain on the table. Is she going to come back with a second vote suggestion? Is she going to try and get a renegotiation of some sort? Are we going to see another election, perhaps, to change Parliament? All of those options remain on the table. Of course, we've got to see whether the Europeans allow any more time for this as well. That's a big question mark. Worth bearing in mind, of course, the Evening Standard is edited by a certain George Osborne, former Chancellor of the Exchequer. So you've got to expect his sourcing in the Cabinet is pretty good.
Lots of questions still to be answered. Bloomberg News Director David Merritt joining us from London. Thanks so much for that. Now for a look at the economic picture in the U.S., we bring in Bloomberg's John Tucker. John.
Where we are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, and this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Thank you, Nathan. Where is the inflation? With the answer to that question and so much more, we're joined now by Bloomberg economist Yelena Shaletova. We get a December CPI report today. What is it going to show us?
Well, we expect core CPI to continue growing at a steady pace, and that is key because the headline number will be distorted by falling oil prices. So
I love the fact I can fill up my car for under 30 bucks.
Right. Great. That's what will support consumer spending in the beginning of the year. So that's an important factor. But in terms of inflation, I think we're going to see a steady pace in core inflation in vehicles and vehicle prices, new and used, will be interesting to see just in terms of the details. We might see a stronger growth in those prices. But overall, I think inflation and inflation outlook will define what happens to Fed policy this year.
We saw stronger wages in that jobs report, that bang-up jobs report. Does that come through this report?
Absolutely. I think there's an existing dichotomy between services prices and goods prices. Goods prices have been weighed on by strong dollar, whereas services prices have been slow to accelerate.
This really starts to get complicated. Inflation, does that dictate the number of rate increases that we get from the Federal Reserve this year?
This is what we think will happen. So in the recent speeches, including yesterday night's Mr. Clarida's speech, the Fed has been talking about inflation being steady right around the target of 2%. We estimate inflation will pick up this year to something like 2.3%, which will push them to deliver a couple of hikes.
Hikes is your forecast?
In June and December.
Okay. I think you're going out on a limb there. But Rich, our producer, sent me this story. U.S. recession risk hits six-year high amid trade war and shutdown, one of the Bloomberg stories. I'm hearing the R word a lot more. How about you?
Well, we don't expect a recession anytime soon. It's just simply because the economy is very much concentrated in the consumer sector, and it's very hard to imagine a situation when consumer growth will be slow to such a critical degree that we'll start talking about
What about
recession.
Corporate spending and corporate investment, more importantly?
That's a concern. That is a concern, and that is coming through a lot of recent Fed speak because business investment slowed down in the third quarter. We saw a significant slowdown in the ISM surveys. So that is a big concern because consumer spending is great in supporting economic growth, but when you have all your eggs in one basket, it creates risk by itself. So other sectors of the economy need to engage as well. And you have housing that is really weak. You really need some other sector to support economic growth.
Okay, you mentioned Rich Clarida and Mr. Powell's speech yesterday, as you heard live on Bloomberg Radio and television. What does the word patience mean to Mr. Market?
I think the recent speakers, they have highlighted data dependency, patience, flexibility, you name it. But I don't think it really means a change in the fundamental view. They still want to remove policy accommodation. It seems like a lot of them are saying that we're still below the neutral.
Are we? I'm trying to get a handle on that. Where are we? I mean, we're still
a little bit accommodative. I think that's a common sense. I think, but they just want to be very patient, and it's a watch and see approach as to whether.
But does patience mean dovishness for markets?
I mean, it's just, I think it just pushes back.
It's like
just
a Rorschach test.
It just pushes back the rate hike, I think. They just want to assess if the tail risks, that's what they call it in the minutes, materialize in a more meaningful way.
Okay, you heard it here from Elena. Two rate hikes this year. I'm going to have you back in December to go over that with you. Elena Shaletova, Bloomberg U.S. economist, this on a day when S&P futures are down 3 points. The Dow futures down 13 points. The Nasdaq E-mini futures 13 points lower. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, John. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Stevens Institute of Technology, the Quant School on the Hudson, with an online master's in financial analytics that teaches the latest data science techniques. Learn more at stevens.edu/fintech.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We begin in the U.K., where we're getting word that Brexit could be delayed beyond the March 29th deadline. That's according to the Evening Standard. The pound is strengthening sharply on the news, currently at $1.2793.
U.S. futures, meanwhile, are little changed. Stocks overseas are mixed as well as we close out the trading week. The S&P 500 is coming off 5 straight days of gains. Chinese stocks posted their biggest weekly gain in almost 2 months, rising 1.6%.
Helping boost stocks this week, optimism on trade and dovish comments from Fed officials. China's Vice Premier Liu He will visit Washington at the end of the month for further talks. Sources say he will meet with Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer.
Fed Chairman Jerome Powell is voicing caution on pushing ahead with interest rate hikes.
The good thing is we're in a place where we can be patient and flexible and wait and see what does evolve. And I think for the meantime, we're waiting and watching.
That sentiment is also being echoed by Vice Chairman Richard Clarida. He says the committee can afford to be patient.
This morning, the Labor Department issues inflation data. Economists forecast the consumer price index dropped 0.1% in December. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice reports.
Bloomberg Economics says core CPI, which excludes food and energy, probably continued to increase at a steady pace last month. The sharp drop in gasoline will probably have little impact outside of the top number. November CPI was unchanged, but core prices were up 0.2%, led by housing, medical care, and used cars. Vinnie Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinny. Oil is headed for its biggest weekly gain in more than 2 years amid hopes OPEC will manage to shrink a glut and U.S.-China trade tensions will ease. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate's up 0.7% or 37 cents at $52.96 a barrel. Brent is up nearly 0.5% or 29 cents, trading at $61.97.
And AB InBev is considering an initial public offering of its Asian operations. Sources tell Bloomberg such a deal could raise more than $5 billion for the Budweiser brewer. Shares of AB InBev are up about 5% on the news. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And S&P futures, they're lower, down 3.5 points. Dow futures down 12. Nasdaq futures down 15. The DAX in Germany's down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 9.36. Seconds, yield 2.70%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. COMEX gold is up 0.4% or $5.30 at $12.92.70 an ounce, and the euro is at $1.1526. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. It is 6:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us what's going on around the world as the partial government shutdown heads into record territory. Michael.
Nathan, thank you, sir. President Trump says that he most likely would declare a national emergency in regards to the U.S. southern border if his administration can't make a deal with Congress over wall funding. The president on Hannity on Fox News says the law is 100% on his side and blames Democrats for the stalemate.
It's not a money thing. It's a political thing. They look at the 2020 race and they're not feeling too good about it. They'll do whatever they can to win.
Democratic Senator Dick Durbin said if the president declared a national emergency and used military funding for the wall, Democrats would take him to court.
If any president, this one or any president, decides that they want to just move unilaterally to spend funds and declare a national emergency for whatever they find of interest, it goes way beyond what I consider the clear delegation of authority of the Constitution.
The partial government shutdown has now entered its 21st day, and about 800,000 workers are not getting a paycheck today. The U.S.-led coalition in Syria has begun to withdraw forces from the country in line with President Trump's orders. That's according to an Associated Press report today, citing a spokesman for the Coalition Against Islamic State. Michael Cohen has agreed to testify before Congress next month. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Cohen, President Trump's former personal attorney, could provide testimony on the inner workings of the Trump business, personal life, and political campaign. He says he wants to further his commitment to cooperate and provide the American people answers. The invitation from Congressman Elijah Cummings, Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. He says he will give a full, credible account of events. Trump reaction?
And I'm not worried about it at all, no.
February 7th. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
A 13-year-old Wisconsin girl who has been missing since October when her parents were murdered has been found alive. Jamie Kloss was found in Gordon, Wisconsin. A person is in custody. The planned demolition of the old Tappan Zee Bridge this Saturday has been postponed due to inclement weather. Demolition crews said that heavy winds delayed the necessary prep work in order to take down the bridge's east anchor span with explosive charges. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, another new Met. They've already added Robinson Cano, Edwin Diaz, Jerry's Familia, Wilson Ramos. Latest signee, free agent infielder Jed Lowry, an all-star last season in Oakland when he drove in 99 runs. He signed for 2 years, $20 million. At the Garden, the Islanders had only one shot on goal in the third period, and Josh Bailey scored. Beat Henrik Lundqvist with about a minute and a half left. Isles won 4-3. They've won 7 of the last 8. The Rangers have lost 5 in a row. Same 2 square off again tomorrow in Brooklyn. Devils lost to Toronto 4-2. College basketball, busy night locally. 11th straight win for Hofstra. Justin Foreman, 37 points. A triple overtime victory. Both Fairleigh Dickinson and Monmouth lost in double OT. A win for Wagner. Losses for St. Peter's and LIU. The Australian Open begins Monday. Andy Murray is going to play, but he admits his hip injury is still bothering him so much that his plan is to retire after Wimbledon, if not sooner. Murray is 31, once the number one player in the world. NFL playoffs tomorrow. Red-hot Indianapolis having won 10 of 11 in Kansas City, where Patrick Mahomes this season threw 50 touchdown passes. The Colts coach, Frank Reich.
He's an electric player. He can create big plays. He can do it out of the pocket, in the pocket. He's got great weapons. It'll be a challenge. It's exciting. You know, as a player, there's something about you that likes playing against the best. And certainly he's had that kind of year. So I think the guys will look forward to that challenge.
The Chiefs haven't won a home playoff game in 25 years. The Cowboys haven't won a road playoff game in 26 years. Tomorrow night they visit the Rams in L.A. And then there's two more games on Sunday with the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. It is 6:37 on Wall Street, and we could get news from General Motors today as the automaker holds an investors meeting. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett reports.
General Motors is poised to present incremental updates on its financial performance and product lines, but Wall Street will be keying in on a longer-term concern, and that is the automaker's strategy to adapt to a fast-evolving market. It comes just ahead of the North American International Auto Show that kicks off in Detroit next week. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Charlie. We also hear directly from GM CEO Mary Barra today. She sits down for an interview with Bloomberg Radio and Television. You can catch that conversation live at 9 a.m. Wall Street time. Coming up on 6:38 Wall Street time, time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
Brace for El Nino, or maybe not. The weather phenomenon marked by warming in the equatorial Pacific and changes in the atmosphere failed to form in the Pacific in December, but U.S. forecasters expect it to arrive soon and persist through the Northern Hemisphere's spring. According to a report from the U.S. Climate Prediction Center in College Park, Maryland, the next expected El Nino probably won't have much impact on global weather or markets, though, given the timing and the weak event that's expected. Still, the odds of a weak El Nino emerging and lasting into spring are about 65%, up from 60%. 60% last month. The Pacific was warm through most of December, but cool in recent weeks, inhibiting changes to the atmosphere. El Niño can make northern U.S. winters milder, bring more storms and cooler weather to the south. Past El Niños dried out agricultural areas across Indonesia, affecting palm oil and coffee. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
Bob, thank you. It's coming up on 6:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
After a long overdue election marred by irregularities and a delay in reporting results, opposition leader Felix Tshisekedi has been provisionally declared the next president of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Under happier circumstances, cheers might be in order for Congo's first peaceful transition of power since independence in 1960. Unfortunately, the election news is tainted. Tshisekedi's win defies pre-election polls and tallies by credible independent election observers, and follows rumors of a backroom deal with outgoing president Joseph Kabila. The U.S. and EU are limited in the leverage they can bring to bear without hurting the country's poorest, but they can apply useful pressure. Congolese voters are the ones ultimately responsible for driving lasting political change. The least outsiders can do is stand with them, not with predatory leaders seeking to preserve their power and wealth. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion editorial board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion editorials can be heard every weekday at this time. Continue to follow the pound on a report from the Evening Standard citing UK government cabinet ministers that the March 29th deadline for Brexit could be extended. Right now, the pound had gained on the news, but now those gains are being paired with spokesman for Theresa May, the prime minister, saying it is not government policy to extend Article 50. Right now, the pound is at $1.28.01. Futures on Wall Street are pointed lower slightly. S&P futures down 3, Dow futures down 14 points, NASDAQ futures also down 14. This is Daybreak. Coming up, the morning call brought to you by Columbia Bank. Yield Plus Checking from Columbia Bank takes the stable growth of a high-rate CD and combines it with the freedom of a checking account. Visit a branch today or ColumbiaBankOnline.com. Count on Columbia.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is 6:47 on Wall Street. We are watching the pound this morning. It rallied to the highest since November on a report that Brexit could be delayed beyond the March deadline before paring gains as the government ruled out an extension. Also watching futures as they decline. We go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
And good morning, Karen. Modest losses in the U.S. futures right now with Dow futures down 7 points. S&P's dropped 2.5. And NASDAQ futures declined by 12. Oil is trading higher, the U.S. 10-year yield at 2.72%, and Japan gained 1% overnight. Well, European markets are trading mixed this morning. Back in the U.S., on the economic front at 8:30, the Consumer Price Index. And in other news, AB InBev is considering an IPO of its Asian operations, and Intel's price target was raised at Citigroup as upside in Q4 results are expected. Wrapping things up, VMware was downgraded to neutral over at Credit Suisse, BlackRock downgraded to hold at Deutsche Bank, Starbucks downgraded to neutral at Goldman Sachs, and Netflix was upgraded to buy over at UBS. Live from the First Break News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. To hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Donald Trump says he's most likely to declare a national emergency to fund a border wall. It comes as President Trump closed off the only live negotiation on Capitol Hill to resolve the partial federal government shutdown. About 800,000 workers will miss their first paycheck today. President Trump's former personal lawyer has agreed to testify next month before the House Oversight Committee. Michael Cohen could potentially provide public testimony on the inner workings of President Trump's business, personal life, and political campaign. British cabinet ministers say it looks like Brexit will be delayed beyond the March 29th deadline. In the NHL, the Islanders beat the Rangers, the Devils lost, the Capitals beat the Bruins. In the NBA, the Celtics lost. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. We're at 6:49 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Our top story in the nation's capital remains the partial government shutdown, now tied with the longest on record at 21 days. Today, the House takes up a bill to make sure furloughed federal workers get paid once it's over. This is the first day without a paycheck for about 800,000 of them. And President Trump hosts a roundtable on border security today with state, local, and community leaders. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter joins me now. The meetings that the president had been holding at the White House over the last several days, of course, have been with congressional Democrats. Is this roundtable today with leaders from across the country a sign now that negotiations are over?
Well, I think, yeah, we saw pretty clearly yesterday that Trump, essentially the White House, moved to sort of end the negotiations directly with Democrats. And the reality is that it's really Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, with a little bit more with Mitch McConnell as well, who hold the ability to end this shutdown at this point, along with Trump, of course. So I think that, you know, certainly the White House doesn't want to look like they're sitting on their hands and not doing anything. But the reality is that the people they would actually be negotiating with are no longer talking.
Yeah. And the question that we've been asking for the last several days is whether the president is going to declare a national emergency to try to get the wall built. It seems as though he's inching ever closer to that declaration.
Absolutely. That certainly seems to be the direction that we're moving. At the point that they're not even talking with Democrats in Congress anymore, it becomes more likely that he would take an action that would seek to circumvent Congress. And I think the sense is that that may be the only real way for Trump to achieve his end goal at this point, given that it seems as though the White House somewhat miscalculated in thinking that Democrats were going to show a little bit of wiggle room on their opposition to the wall once Nancy Pelosi's speaker election was behind her. That has not happened. Democrats, Pelosi and Schumer, have been very, very adamant in their opposition to any kind of wall funding. And I think that the White House was a bit caught by surprise by that. And so now is trying to figure out another way around that.
Yeah, and I guess what we're hearing in terms of how the White House is trying to figure this out is asking the Army Corps of Engineers to look at diverting storm relief money toward building the wall. And that would include funds for Puerto Rico. I mean, doesn't that open up a whole other political can of worms?
It certainly does. I mean, and also keep in mind that, you know, these are funds that Puerto Rico, I would say, kind of desperately needs. And so it creates, optically, it creates a bit of a problem for the White House if they do take that tact. And also, you know, there are natural disasters that could still occur. And so it puts them in kind of a deficit in terms of down the road. If there's additional money that's needed, then, you know, again, even just politically, the optics of saying that Trump diverted that money to pay for his border wall could be problematic.
So where do you see this going from here at this point? I mean, we've talked in the past about if an emergency declaration is declared, even as much as the president might have the authority to make such a declaration, he could be heading into another legal fight. I mean, even if there's a declaration, it's not like the fight is over.
Absolutely. It just shifts the fight to the courts instead of the fight between being between Trump and Congress. I'm sure there would be a pretty immediate legal challenge if Trump were to declare a national emergency at the southern border. And then that would have to play out in the courts. And the question is, you know, what happens with the shutdown in the meantime? Does the government stay shut down while that plays out? Or is there a acknowledgement on the part of Republicans, particularly Mitch McConnell in the Senate, who so far has refused to bring the House passed legislation that doesn't include the wall money up for a vote? Does that, you know, sort of unjam the wheels there and provide a path to reopening the government in the meantime while that legal challenge is played out in court? Or, you know, does the president remain opposed to that approach? And then we could be looking at a very, very protracted government shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some chatter, including on Bloomberg News, that if the president does declare a national emergency and say, hey, I've got the funds from other sources, it would almost obviate the need for a government shutdown, because then he could argue that, you know, he doesn't need to ask Congress for the money.
Yeah, I guess to me, though, the logic of that is a bit flawed in terms of why do we have the shutdown then to begin with?
Yeah.
If he had that authority and he could do that without Congress, and Congress is, if his argument is that Congress is irrelevant because he has, because there is this crisis and he has the power to get the money, then why are we sitting here on, you know, the third, heading into the fourth week of a government shutdown? Why didn't he take that action back in late December?
So, in our last 30 seconds here, what are you going to be watching for as we head into the weekend?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens over the weekend in terms of whether there is an additional push or some kind of a push to restart the talks. Obviously, everyone's watching very closely today to see if the president does declare a national emergency. That would, again, sort of shift the game and begs the question of, you know, what happens then with the shutdown if he does do that. So I think those are kind of the big things to watch. I think also any kind of fallout from the news that, you know, the 800,000 federal workers that are missing their paycheck today, I think that's going to be probably something to watch closely over the weekend in terms of whether there's some additional fallout from that.
Indeed. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. Read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. Follow the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. It's 6:55 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
I'm Ramesh Paniru, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. When it comes to the politics of taxation, the rich keep getting richer. Even politicians who want to raise taxes feel obliged to shield the middle class from tax increases. And the definition of the middle class keeps expanding to include higher earners. In 1990, taxes were raised on all married couples making more than $157,000 in today's dollars. In 2010, President Barack Obama raised taxes on couples making more than $250,000. This week, many progressives are defending the idea of taxing 70% of income above $10 million. This upward drift reflects the Democrats' rising appeal to the upper middle class. In their new coalition, raising taxes on couples making more than $300,000 is not a surefire applause line. Fixating on the top 1% or the top 0.1% is safer. But it also limits how much revenue the tax increases can generate. The next time Democrats raise taxes, they'll almost certainly target a small fraction of households to yield a small amount of revenue. I'm Ramesh Paniru. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or O-P-I-N go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Karen?
Thanks, Nathan. 6:56 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report. And here's John Tucker. John, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. If you're a small business looking for a loan, odds are increasing you'll be looking to Amazon. Amazon issued $1 billion in loans in 2017, compared with a total of $3 billion since 2011. That indicates its lending business is gaining momentum. The invite-only loans were issued to Amazon sellers and may pose a threat, particularly for smaller regional and local banks, as they take away small business loans. Now, here's where they have an edge. Amazon's data on sellers helps it select quality borrowers. They know who's selling, what they're selling, how much they're making. It means that Amazon can significantly reduce the chance that its loan won't get paid back. Amazon Lending earns interest while enabling more selling and commission revenue through Amazon.com. Now, Amazon recently did slow its lenders' lending to better manage credit risk, but the recent partnership with Bank of America suggests the company expects this business to grow. And that is today's Bloomberg Small Business Report. Karen.
All right, John Tucker, thank you. We continue to watch the British pound this morning. It is now at $1.2829. It rallied to the highest since November on that report that Brexit could be delayed beyond the March deadline before it began paring gains as the government ruled out an extension. And we'll have more on that story and more on Bloomberg Surveillance, which is straight ahead with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.